Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Good evening. Jim Jarvis here, along with my co-host Han Tran. Han, how are you this evening?
I am doing fantastic, Jim. Absolutely fantastic. How are yourself?
Doing well. Doing well. Temperatures are beautiful up here in northwestern Ohio, which is kind of amazing. But they say it's going to cool off again. So I guess maybe we've got our autumn or Indian summer that they talk about. And so that's, you don't worry about that down there, obviously. But
no, actually, we don't.
Hurricanes, yeah.
Well, here's the thing about hurricanes, Jim. Around this time of year in Florida, we have the hurricane. But the good thing is that it's bringing a lot of benefit into the breadbasket of the United States. Okay, it ushers in the winter months, the cold air and all that good stuff that you get to enjoy shortly here. Okay, it's a gift that's keep on giving until like April.
Okay. Excellent. Okay. There you go. Well, obviously, welcome to Straight Talk episode number 94. We're zooming in on that 100 episode, and tonight's topic, we're gonna go into the questions and answers. But unfortunately, there's not a lot of questions because the two three questions we have slated to discuss are actually like mini shows. They're pretty in depth, and so we felt that it would be very important to present these topics in such a way that you might be able to at least get some knowledge or information that's potentially germane to what you're doing in your practice. So with that, let's just kind of jump right into the one that came in that is, we hear it a lot, and it's a question that I have to move out of my facility, whatever the reason might be. You know, the lease may have run out. You don't like the location anymore. You've outgrown it and can't do anything. But bottom line is, what are my options? Well, your options are really pretty straightforward in the sense you can either go lease a new space, you can lease an existing space and renovate it, or you can buy a new place or buy a new piece of property and build something new, or you can buy a existing piece of property with maybe a building on it and renovate that. Each one of those scenarios has a long list of pros and cons and topics and discussions. So, Han, we could go on forever to talk about all those things.
Yes, we can. We can break it down to, like you say, mini episodes on all the scenario that could possibly involve in any scenario that we talk about. So, we don't have enough time to do all that. But,
right, and that really isn't the crux of the question, because the second part of this question is, okay, how do I get my new facility, whether it's a leased or a new build, developed if I don't want to do it myself? Now, there's a core question there, and that is the word developed. So let's talk a little bit about the definition of what a developer is and what a developer does, as opposed to a lot of the other discussions that are out there. A developer is the entity that will put up, purchase, and potentially own the property that is being created for you, and that relationship is one of, you know, we don't want you to be confused that they're the builder or they're the designer or they're the lending institution. The developer is the entity that actually spearheads and creates this new property, whatever it's going to be. And you can develop anything, really. It could be a bare piece of land, right, Han?
Yep.
Yeah, it could be a bare piece of land. It could be an existing building. Maybe it's an old bank or some other commercial real estate property. It's important when you say commercial real estate property. Obviously, it could be a maybe a group of two or three or four residential properties that you put together. We've seen that happen before, where a developer has gone in and has a dentist, for example, that wants to put in his facility, but there really isn't the available properties around, commercial properties. And so the developer says, okay, I'm going to buy up these three or four houses, combine them together, and create a new commercial lot and develop that commercial lot. And the dentist is going to be part of, and that whole arrangement. And there's quite a lot that has to happen there. You have to get into potentially zoning change, use group changes with the zoning department, because let's say they were real estate residential properties. Those properties are zoned R, which is residential, and you need them to be turned to commercial or business in this case, so that you can utilize the property as your dental office. And the other thing about it is, more than likely, a developer is going to be looking at your particular situation. And that's going, I mean, sure, there's folks that do this, but they're not going to just develop just for you. So, I mean, there are folks that will do that, but we're talking about developing maybe a new retail center that has multiple tenants in it. There's some big advantages to that, because then you get to share reduced operating costs, reduced what they call common fees, to, you know, everything from landscaping to maintenance to snow removal to, you know, grass cutting, all the things that go along with owning a piece of property that get prorated to your particular size. So if you're sharing a development with three or four other users, be it, you know, they could be what, chiropractors, it could be, you know, who knows, you know, a Subway, and just, you know, anything, you get to break up that cost and share that. So what other, when I was talking about developers, Han, you know, there are other groups out there that sometimes get confused with what a developer is or does. And you and I were talking about that a little bit before the show started. You wanted to discuss that a little bit?
I think you know, there have to be a an understanding exactly what's usually involved when a dentist is looking for a new space for a startup project or a second location, and so on. Is that the regular scenario? You know, the standard scenario is, you know, find an existing building, whether it's a commercial or medical office building or an existing retail facility, and so on, and trying to find a space that works for them. When you talk about development, usually it makes it worthwhile for the developer as an investment is that that piece of property had to be big enough to make it financially worthwhile. So for a developer to go in and say, I'm going to develop an acre of land for a dentist that's going to use, build a building that's 2,500 square feet, 3,000 square feet. That's a very, very small, almost non-existence. Okay, as a standalone development, it's usually you will be the potential leaser. In this case, the dentist will probably be in a piece of a large development. It could be an outlot. Of that large development with larger anchors like a grocery store or a big box retailer and things like that. So you have, as far as we know, I'm sure there's other hybrid, but you have developer that are basically like consultants. They hire themselves out to investors, and they spearhead all of the activities. They find the land and all that stuff and do all the legwork so that once they're done, that piece of land will become buildable for the purpose you want to build it, that it can be developed with, XYZ as in the master plan. But once that all their work is done, then you can proceed with building your building project. But that developer will be hired by the client. In this case, is whether it's an investor and or the dentist themselves. We are in conversation with a client that go through that scenario. He bought a piece of land. It's big enough just for his building. And he hired a developer to do all the things that's necessary that's involved in how that property is going to be used. And he get paid for that services. That developer put no money up front. Okay, so he's providing the service. The scenario that Jim's talking about is a developer / investor that they buy the land, they develop it, and then they find tenant or anchor that's gonna go in and lease. Lease the building that's going to be built for them and things of that nature. So one is that one provide their services as a developer for service for cash, and the other one is they invest their time, their money, their resource, and they become the owner, operator, landlord, and all that. And that's the two big differences.
Right. Now, there's a hybrid to that scenario in the sense that you can also have a developer that is part owner with the dentist. So that contractual relationship is, of course, established to create an entity, let's call it the, XYZ LLC. A lot of times these are LLCs. You can talk to your accountant as to why that is. And that XYZ LLC is actually the owner of the property. And you and the developer, or the investor in this case, the investment development entity, are partners on the property. So effectively, you're leasing, but you're leasing from XYZ LLC, which you happen to be part owner of. So it's like you're leasing from yourself, which again, talk to your accountant as to why that's a good thing. And so you don't just have the scenario where you're always leasing and putting money into some other owner / developer's pocketbook. You can put it right back into your own coffers in that kind of relationship. The two important things to kind of realize that if you're in this situation, that you would like to entertain working with a developer, and you can see the advantages to that, like becoming a part owner or leasing from to get your new facility. You may say, well, why would I want to do that? Well, first of all, a lot of times there isn't the availability of the right size piece of property in the region that you want to be in. And that could be because of, lack of properties or lack of revenue or just other factors that cause that. But what happens is that, you know, to be able to build a dental office in the 3,000 to 5,000 square foot range, you need somewhere what, 3/4 to an acre piece of property. Now, you might not be able to find a 3/4 to an acre piece of property in the right location. And go back to our podcast. We talked about how location is so crucial and so critical to the success of a practice. Now, you might be able to, this will allow you then to be able to say, okay, developer, let's take on this bigger piece of property. And it allows me to carve off my little portion of it as part of this group. And then there'll be 2 or 3 or 4 or 5, who knows, based upon the size of other tenants that are part of this complete development. And so it makes the availability of potential land locations much broader. You know, so yeah, maybe you can get yourself a 5 or 10 acre piece of property, and then that gets turned into a nice size development and you're part of it. So you get the win-win-win of getting in the right location. You've got other traffic going by you to get to these other users that are within this development. And you're only dealing with the little portion of it that's your part. You don't have to go in and say, oh, crap, I got to buy 10 acres. And the upfront cost for that to be able to be in this location. So there are a lot of advantages to that. The other thing that a typical arrangement like this is going to be is if you're going to be obviously an owner with the developer, this is a long-term relationship. So it's not something that you would want to say, well, I only do this for 5 years, then I'm out. Or, 5 years, I'll be looking at something else. I mean, these are kind of, the 10-year arrangements, even the lease onlys. The typical developer is going to want to see at least a 10-year lease for you, because effectively, you become the anchor, or at least one of the anchors, that spearhead this whole development to move forward. On you were talking.
It's not uncommon for a developer to go in and look at, a series of small commercial properties and merge them together.
Mm-hmm.
To build larger type of development. Down here in Florida, what you often see a lot is commercial condos, where they go in and they buy, 10, 20 acre parcel, and they build condo buildings that are usually around 5,000 square feet each. And then whether they sell the condo or part of the condo, or they lease part of it. So, for a dentist to go out and develop a piece of property on his own or her own, it becomes pretty costly. But if they get into a relationship or partnership with a large development, then they can get what they need with less financial, less less money or less investment, and still get what they need, get what they want, and you know, and really capitalize on you know, on the opportunities for financial as well as visibility and all that they can, that they may not be able to do on their own.
Yeah, you really get to maximize the bang for your buck. The other thing that is kind of important to talk about during this kind of a relationship where you're working together with a developer is obviously there's going to have to be some kind of lending institution involved. Now, the lending institution is going to look at the combined strength and financial portfolio of both the developer and if you're part owner, you and your practice. So you get the plus side of obviously being a much stronger business entity to be able to take on paper, to be able to take on a much bigger kind of project like this than if you were to go in by yourself, because then you're only looking at, they're only looking at you singularly. And this just opens so much more possibilities because of that. So that's an important aspect. Now, I guess the question that always comes up is, how do I get a hold of, where do I find a developer? Who are these people? Now, there's groups all over the country that do this kind of stuff. Some of them are very, very big, and some of them are very small. But we have an ongoing relationship with a development group that's created by, it's basically a group of doctors along with some financial people that do this kind of stuff. And they love to do and would love to do dental specific projects. So if you are interested, feel free to contact us. Get a hold of us, and we will make the necessary connection with you and them, and at least give you the opportunity to see if it works, if it's something that's what you would be interested in, and they have the capability to go out and find the right kind of location. They have the capability of developing the property to basically, you know, to suit you, because the way they've described it, and we've talked about it and done it before, is that you are actually the anchor, because dental offices, we've had that discussion before from the banking institutions, see you as very strong financial support to any particular project or development like this. So it could be a win-win for you and them, but mostly for you, because like Han was just saying, you get to get the biggest bang for your dollar and still get a new facility or get a renovated existing facility. Because I've seen sometimes where they go in and buy an existing facility and add to it, and renovate the other part, and, you know, basically it looks like a brand new one when it's all said and done. Or they'll go in and buy an existing building because the property's right, but the building's junk, and you tear down the building and build brand new. Or like the house scenario where there's no other available commercial properties, this is the perfect place, tear down a bunch of old houses and turn them into a new commercial facility. When I say commercial, the other part of it's important that you understand, it doesn't mean you don't have a right to say who's going to be your next door neighbor. So, and obviously talk with the person that helps you with your leasing, but you would want to have a discussion and put it in your agreement that you wouldn't want to have another dentist, a competitor, within your development. You wouldn't want to have, some undesirable kind of users within your development. So you would have that at least that availability to be able to control who's going to be your next door neighbor or who you're sharing the particular property with.
John, we've had in the recent month that spoke with clients that actually locate in a development that would resemble very much like a retail strip, but it's exclusively for medical use. So
yes.
It's basically commercial condos where a group of doctors would get together and they develop a piece of property that they become owner tenant. Okay, and we have done project with that type of scenario. So there is numerous of ways to do to do things or to build or to develop. The working with the developer is different than consultants who help you with startup. Find contractor, find financial resources, and might even train you with business management and things like that. They serve more like consultants with dentists building their practice for the first time or the second time possibly. But what we're talking about are developer who built and developed land and built buildings for tenant, whether it's partner, owner, or just straight out tenant in the commercial property. So there's certainly a number of ways that allow you to achieve your objective. So this is what Jim and I are talking about is one of the scenario, maybe two of the scenario, but not the only scenario.
Right.
Okay.
That's exactly true. It could be there are a lot of other possibilities, but and I guess I don't want to give the impression that the developer is not the builder. So it's not a design build kind of scenario. Okay. The developer
Correct.
Is totally separate from the builder, right?
Right. I mean, you have developer who built, who developed the property, who financed it, and they hire out, for all of the necessary consultants, the engineers, contractor, and things like that.
Right.
Very few. Yeah, we only had encounter a few developer who have their own, not necessarily construction company, but they do have a construction entity that provide a certain or limited ability to build. There is not a one-stop shop per se, but it's a scenario that could be pulled together and provide you with the means and without too much risk. And you can have pretty much your cake and eat it too if you do your homework properly.
Right, and that's an important thing we just talked about, Han, is the risk. The developer is the entity, a true developer is the entity that's actually putting money into the project. They've got skin in the game. Now, if you were just leasing, they're the owner, they have all the skin in the game, and all you have is a contractual relationship with them to lease the property. And eventually develop your, and eventually create your dental office in it. Okay. Now, if you're part owner with that developer, in the example XYZ LLC, then you have skin in the game and they have skin in the game. More skin, as one would say, because it allows for – it's kind of a prorated relationship. You know, let's say you're building 3,000 feet, but the whole development is 10,000 feet. So there's 7,000 feet that the developer has to carry, where you only have to carry the 3,000, your portion of. So again, an example of it helps you to be able to get into a location, to get to a place without having to risk so much in that regard. We kind of see that.
You know, we
go ahead.
Yeah, we encounter, you know, a lot of time our client, when they come to us, they present what they're looking at. You know, I find a location, it's ideal, but it's not built yet. You know, the landlord, whether it's the landlord, developer, will be building this building. It will be done in a year, and I can be the tenant. That's fine, because that's quite typical. But we're talking about you being involved potentially at the front end of the development, so that you can be potentially a partner or just, you know, a tenant. But being a tenant at, you know, in the discussion early in the development, is that you could potentially pick out the best location, and, you know, and may even can negotiate the type of architecture and all of that. So, you potentially can get the best of both worlds, even as a tenant. Okay,
how many developments have we looked at where dentists are going into a development and there's no windows on the side of the building? Typically the way dental offices are laid out in these commercial retail centers is the operatories, you know, end up getting along the one long wall, and there's not a single window in there. In this scenario, especially if you pick the one of the two end portions of the building, you could have windows along the whole side of it if you negotiate that in as part of it, and each one of your operatories could have a window. I mean, that's good stuff.
Yeah. I mean, you have opportunity to lease and or negotiate. So if the building is already designed and you find this, you know, space because it had great visibility, the traffic count, all that stuff is perfect, but the only space that's available is, you know, you're being sandwiched between a restaurant and a restaurant and a nail salon. Well, it is what it is, okay? But if you're at the front end of the discussion, you could potentially position yourself to get the better piece of the pie. It's rare, but it could, because when a development is being discussed or being planned, and, you know, I think the primary objective for the investor, the developer, is to have tenants in those buildings, in those spaces. So if you are, you know, if it's designed or planned for like a medical complex, then they may not build a strip, but they may build smaller buildings that are 5, 6, or 10,000 square feet, so it become more palatable for the client, where you get exposure, you have more control, and versus a 3, 4, 5 story building that are 60, 80,000 square feet, and you're just one of the tenants in that huge building that you become a maze. So there's a lot of opportunity just depends on, you know, whether you have the appetite or the creative need to take on and participate in it.
It was important for us to get this information out because it's another option. We see this for young docs coming out of school, and they want to, open their doors and do something, but a lot of times they don't have the financial wherewithal to be able to create and develop a piece of property of their own. Well, this might be, something that would be helpful. We also see this for doctors that are, well-established but need to get out of their existing situation, be it maybe they're leasing and it's a crappy scenario, or the demographics have changed, or there's not enough room, or whatever it is, they need to get out. And so, this is a perfect opportunity for them to make that jump. If they don't feel comfortable enough of developing a property of their own. Now, obviously, the ultimate is, you could develop your own piece of property. You take on all the responsibility, you take on all the risk, but it's yours, and everything apart about it is yours, and you can do that as well. But at least this gives you another option. And that's what this is all about, is options.
Jim, a lot of discussion I read, and I think, a lot of medical professional, whether you're a dentist or a medical doctor or other, high-paying professionals, they're looking for ways to diversify their income.
Yeah.
And so they end up, they will buy into, whether it's an investment group there, they buy into franchise and hotels and, what is that, that hair salon, that haircut place. Anyway, but they invest into other businesses, okay? And they invest into real estate, okay? So this is, whether you're young starting out or established dentist who's looking for a way to expand your portfolio, you can be a real estate investment firm that develop your own, develop the land, become the tenant, lease from yourself, and go from there. So it's almost an endless possibilities, but it's those opportunities, those options and opportunity are there. You just have to identify what worked for you.
Excellent. Well, I think that's good for that topic. You said you had a question that came in, or was something that came across the board, huh?
Hey, this is just about in the same scenario as developing property. I was in a discussion, and often my part of the opportunity I often get is to see what is being designed by others and, provide critique on it. And a lot of time I see a building being designed. And the biggest thing that lacks is, where is it going and what kind of land would it go on? If you design a building independent from the property itself, it's almost like giving a treatment plan to a patient that's not there. It doesn't work well. Okay, in this particular scenario, a design of a building was presented, and I often ask what we would call a preliminary site design, so that you can see how the building is going to fit onto the site, how it's going to be used, how the two pieces integrate together, so that you make sure that once you pull the trigger to buy the land, to build this building on, it can be done. Okay? It's like getting all your pieces and parts on paper so that you can see. This particular scenario involved a, the design of a building that's approximately 5,000 square feet. And the question was asked, is there a site design that goes with this? And the answer was, I have a very large piece of land. That shouldn't be a problem. And that is a good answer, but it's probably not the right answer for the question. The question is this. If you, let's say you have a 50-acre piece of land, that's huge for a dentist, okay? Your property, if you're building a 5,000-square-foot facility, you may need about an acre of that piece of land. So where is that building going to go on that 50 acres of land? And that's the huge question. Is that, do you put it in the middle of it? Because that way you get to enjoy, you have no neighbor within your reach. You get to enjoy nature and the open sky, and so on, which is rare. And that may not be the smartest thing to do with that 50 acres of land. Access to the property, future development, future expansion, all of those things need to be at least on a preliminary basis answered. Otherwise, the placement of, close your eyes and point on the property and go, it may go here, may not yield you the best use of that property. Okay, Jim, could you explain a little bit the difference between a... Jim?
Yeah, go ahead.
Could you explain a little bit the difference between a preliminary site design versus a master plan? Because we're talking slightly different, but one is for a smaller development or more site.
One is more diverse and one is more singularly kind of focused. And Han, you're exactly right, because there is just so many variables as to how you place your building on the property that will that could make or break your project, that could make your place very user-friendly, attractive, and comfortable, or it could make it very uncomfortable. And that is everything from, orientation to the sun, access, meaning vehicular access and pedestrian access and those kind of things. And we were talking a little bit about, and I'll jump into your question here in a second, but we were talking a little bit before the show, that in that kind of scenario, how are you going to develop the rest of the property is crucial in that how you're going to put your development, your practice into that overall development. So let's delve into the question you asked. The question you ask is preliminary site design. Preliminary site design is, all right, let's say you're taking an acre out of this 50 acre, and in that you want to site your building, orientation, deal with things like setbacks, any utility kind of things, but mostly parking, where your curb cut's going to be, again, how the building is oriented so that you have views and sun orientation. If you're up north, you deal with issues like snow in the right orientation, north winds, northwest winds, that kind of stuff. That'll all dictate where your front door might be, where your parking's going to be, those kind of things. Then the rest of the property, how you're intending to develop that. Let's look at the two scenarios that Han, you and I were talking about. And these are kind of extreme scenarios, but it gives an example. Let's say that on the remaining property, you're going to put a distribution center in. or you're going to, someone is going to put a distribution center in. Maybe it's for like a Home Depot or something like that. That would fit on a 49-acre property. Well, you know what those things are. They're just big, big boxes with all kinds of loading dock doors all the way around the perimeter in a giant sea of concrete paving, so that you basically see tractor trailer after tractor trailer after tractor trailer backed up to these things. And they come in 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in and out, in and out, in and out. Now, if you only have one access drive to that property, and that access drive goes right by your front door going back to that distribution center, is that something you think would be desirable? We don't think it would be, because obviously it'd be a kind of an interesting thing when your patient's looking out their windows and all they see is Home Depot trucks going by 24 hours a day. So in that scenario, you would probably want to have a secondary entrance to that remaining property separate from your entrance and divided in such a way that you properly screen your there's maybe landscaping and trees and fences and all the kind of nice stuff to be able to minimize that visual stuff that you don't want to look at. Now, the other flip scenario one might be is like, well, let's say that that development is a retail life center or a center like we have them up here is called Levis Commons or even a Prime Outlets. Those are all over the country. You know, let's say that somebody was going to put in a Prime Outlets. Well, that is a ton of traffic that you would love to see go by your front door, because you want to see, you want them to see you, because they're your potential patients. So you want to have that exposure. So in that scenario, you want to create the development and the access to that in such a way that this traffic goes by your building and they see this beautiful new structure. And, oh, yeah, I need to get a new dentist. And so it creates business for you, in essence. So in the regard of the question that you asked, Han, the preliminary site plan only deals with the 1 acre. The master plan deals with the complete property, all 50 acres. And a master plan would outline the potential placements of those kind of developments. So if it's going to get developed, if you think that you'd like to see what it would look like, a master plan development for an outlet mall or a business condominium development, those kind of things, that would be laid out so it would work perfectly with your development. Now, if it's going to become something that is like distribution center or some factory or some other kind of thing, then that would have a totally different layout. And the master plan would show that. And so I guess that's the important part of the master plan, gives you the direction that you want to move forward with the rest of the property, so that you don't get yourself into a pickle, to use the vernacular, you don't get yourself into a pickle by developing your 1 acre in such a way that it hurts you down the road. Did that answer the question, Hon?
That certainly answered my question. Let me add a couple of other layer of details in this, okay? It happened to be a piece of farmland. So my experience with most farmland are just wide open space, and you may get a patch of woods here or there, or surrounded by woods at the perimeter. Okay, my opinion, and at least my observation in the last 30 some plus year, is that trees, okay, are temporary. When you look at a large piece of property, you want to know what's going to happen will potentially happen down the road as you develop the property. So that the that great view that you may have for the first couple of years, you really love that stretch of trees in the beyond the field. That looks wonderful. But as the property get developed, that's going to go away. That may go away. So the orientation of the building and all that have to play in what will happen in the future. Not simply, I want, you know, on the west side of the build, of the property, there's, you know, just a row of, you know, of walnuts that I really think my patient's going to love because the deer go there and feed on it. It's just wonderful. And therefore, my all my opportunities going to face west so that they can enjoy that. The problem is the west side of the building is the hottest side of the building. And as and if future development include taking, you know, building that block the view to that beautiful growth of trees, then you end up with a building that have a hot side of the building facing all of your operatory and no view. Okay, so when you develop your property and you do the preliminary design of the site, all those things can be resolved, all those things can be designed into so that you can enjoy it, you'll enjoy the best of it, and the ideal orientation of building can be done so it has the least effect on, you know, with the solar orientation and all that. So it's give yourself a snapshot of what your particular parcel would look like and how it can be utilized. And then the big picture of the overall development of the entire property so that you get a roadmap of what it is that you need to do and how to do and things like that. So you don't have to second guess anything.
Right. And that's an important thing, Han, the roadmap, because this really is just that. It's the roadmap for the property. Now, a lot of times, and we've talked about this in previous podcasts, the master plan is something that is changeable. It does tweak with time, but it's still a map in a sense that it gives you a general direction of where you want to go. So it's crucial. That was a very good question. We've got seven more minutes. Was there another one you wanted to jump into, or?
Yes. This one's not too complicated. Okay. You know, when you do a project, eventually you're going to get to a point where you hear this term, the certificate of occupancy. Okay.
Mm.
That is when the city or the municipality give you the green flag and say you pass and you can open your door for business. So your whole entire objective from design to construction, all that, is to get that piece of paper and call this a certificate of occupancy. Sometimes things happen where it may delay that. And you still got a deadline that you have to open. And so depends on how complete your project is. And so then we see three scenarios. The certificate of occupancy for permanent occupancy with no conditions. That means you got everything done on time and you pass, you know, you pass with flying colors. The other one is that if you have a few things that are still outstanding, that need to be completed. So they give you what we call the conditional certificate of occupancy, meaning that they allow you to get in, open the door for business, with the understanding that there's a few things that still need to be finished, and then you call them and they do the inspection, and then they give you the permanent certificate of occupancy. The worst scenario, okay, is the temporary certificate of occupancy. Mm-hmm. That simply means that you're in a pinch and they're going to be nice to you and they're going to let you in. And they, with this, with this list of conditions that need to be satisfied, and you have this deadline to complete it. Okay, that is the understanding, and that I think that's that comes with a lot of pressure and a lot of stress. Is that if you don't get all those things done, and you have a hard-nosed building inspector who is the one responsible for giving you this certificate of occupancy, you can find yourself in a bigger pickle. Is that you have a practice that's been open, and you have to shut down because you did not fulfill the agreement. And that would be bad news.
Right. And when you say you did not fulfill the agreement, more than likely what you're saying is your builder did not finish the necessary things necessary
right.
for that. And this could
Correct.
Be anything.
Correct.
This could be anything from failing to put the necessary. We've seen this. This is real. Put the necessary landscaping on the outside of the building. Have placed the incorrect tree species outside the building. Those are real issues that were raised on projects that we've had, where the contractor said he couldn't find that kind of tree, so he put another tree in its place. The governmental agency, the official, tagged it and said, nope, it has to be replaced, because that was their particular rule. You know, that's a pretty difficult place to develop, but that's what you had to deal with. Now, you will more than likely never get a conditional or a temporary occupancy if you have life safety issues that are not completed. So if you don't have the necessary, let's say your building is sprinkled, you don't have the sprinkler system up and running, you don't have the alarm system up and running, the fire alarm system, you don't have exit signs, the proper signage and illumination that's necessary to meet those code. Those things have to be in place or you're not going to get any form of occupancy. But what we're talking about is it could be things as simple as this particular door needs to be placed and you're waiting for the door to come in, for example. Okay. It has nothing to do with life safety. It's just a separation door. Okay. Now, if it was a door that was in a fire-rated wall assembly, they're not going to give you an occupancy of any kind if that door is missing. That door has to be there. So I guess keep that in mind in, you know, when you're getting down to crunch time with your builder at the very end and working with the building official to get your occupancy portion. Now, obviously the best is just like Han said, the very first one. You've gone through everything. Everything is completed. They've checked off all the little boxes on their checkoff list, and you get the complete certificate of occupancy. That's a good time. It's time to celebrate. You can, you know, keep that piece of paper. And by the way, keep that piece of paper. You want to keep that piece, lock it up in a safe. Keep it there. You want to have that for all times. But when you run into those things like, you know, I've got patients scheduled on this coming Monday, and I can't not see these patients. The other practice is shut down now because half the equipment is gone, and I moved it over here to this new location, all that kind of stuff. You know, that's when you find yourself in that conditional and or temporary occupancy world.
Yeah, and you know, you have to, this is where that the scheduling thing is important. You know, you stay on your contractor, make sure that they do their job, make sure that everything that are pertinent That does that would meet the life safety issues for your building, so that in the worst scenario, you can get a conditional occupancy and be in the building and still see a patient. But if the contractor failed to complete those portions and deal with life and safety issues, you're going to find yourself in a very difficult predicament. Because if you're most of our clients is building a new building or a new practice because their lease is running out. Typically, that's the scenario, and that's a bad thing. A starting out dentist may have a little more flexibility. If things get a little late, they can work with that. But if you're in a scenario where you have a lease, that becomes very costly. Okay, so stay on your contractor. Make sure that you do things to accommodate your schedule. Jump up and down, scream and holler if you need to. Ideally, you want to have the certificate of occupancy, with everything complete.
Yep.
So you can rest at night. Okay. That's it for me, Jim.
Yeah, that was another good question, because there are three possibilities there. I want to call them the good, better, and not
good,
really
bad, good. Ugly.
Yeah, good, bad, and ugly. One's very ugly, especially since it has a timetable that will shut you down. Well, we've gone through the whole hour. Hopefully this information has been helpful. Feel free at any time to get a hold of Han or I. Get us on our website. You can catch us on email or the phone number. If you need or want more information about something, you can schedule a consult with us and talk about anything that has to do with your particular practice. Feel free. That's what we're here for. And obviously, thank you for spending the time with us. Be safe out there. The last thing we want to hear is a bunch of dentists that are catching COVID, and doing everything you can to be safe, and we'll do the same. So with that, Han, I'll let you have the last word.
Like Jim said, we blow through or burn through an hour pretty quickly. I certainly appreciate all of you plugging in and and hanging out with us for the last hour. Hope it was fun. It's not boring like watching paint dry. Until next time, you all have a good evening and stay safe. Take care.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. To contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.